Hello there, you awakening wonders. I couldn't be more honoured that you have joined us for conversation, connection and love at a time when it feels sometimes that we're on the precipice of real disaster, when the people in Maui are suffering because of these fires, when there are conspiracies everywhere that it was inaugured with ill intent and will benefit the elites and establishment that we're coming to detest. I want to offer out to you the spirit of love and friendship. I welcome you with an open heart and an open mind, whoever you are and wherever you're from, and tell you now with clarity that you belong in this movement. You deserve to be who you are. You can express yourself freely here. For the first 15 minutes, we're going to be on YouTube. Then we will glide to the other place where free speech flows like abundant wine down from Mount Sinai. Not like the tablets of Moses, no, but like a liquor, like an ambrosia that will light us up and change our consciousness. Let's partake in this ceremony together. We're going to be talking about when RFK, friend of the show, my pull-up opponent, went on Tucker and he talked about Ukrainian biolabs. Now, I know those of you that are a little bit more in the conspiracy world, you knew about this stuff ages ago. Let us know in the comments and chats, actually, if you were aware of that biolab story already. Let us know if you were dismissed, called a crackpot and a tinfoil hat wearing nut job as a result of espousing those theories. Well, it seems that there's more credibility to them than we first thought. In our item, here's the news. We're going to be looking at the investigation by special counsel. Is this the story, Gal, my on-screen assistant and dear friend, that the person that's conducting this investigation is the person that gave the plea deal?
They negotiated the plea deal, yes.
He negotiated the plea deal and now he's going to investigate.
Yeah, he's got special powers now though, Russ.
That's special powers.
Special powers now.
When he was doing the plea, he had no powers.
No, they were just normal powers.
I've got normal powers here. That's not going to be enough to learn anything more than your name might be Robert. Like Hunter, did you know that Hunter Biden's name was Robert? Let's know in the chat. If you're watching us on Rumble right now, why don't you join us in the locals chat there, like Ashella and Tamara Spencer and True Chimera and I Art by Wendy. They're talking about conspiracy theories around Hawaii. That's what they're chatting about now. You'll love it. I've got a great guest coming on. He was recommended to me by none other than former SAS hero and TV superstar Bear Grylls. He said to me, you've got to talk to Dr. Paul Saladino on your show. You've got to talk. He goes, Russell, you're a vegan, right? I said, Bear, you know from our time together when we went on that adventure, did you take a glance up my kilt? And he said, of course I did. I took my opportunity when he was there. I go, so do you think I'm vegan? He goes, I saw that you're a vegan. And now I know that Bear's a carnivore from what I saw up
right,
there. There's a barbecue on that grill. There's a vina on the barbecue.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah? There's a steak grilling up there. Well, Paul Saladino, and this might sound crazy to you, and let me know if it does, because I don't want you feeling like you're listening to crazy talk here, because this is a movement. This is a revolution. This is where the pilgrims come. This is the place where we come to taste the sweet wine of freedom. I've told you that. Dr. Paul Saladino says we should be tanning our ball bags to within an inch of our life. Now, I don't know if that contravenes WHO guidelines. I'll be so let me be careful, because on YouTube, they've just updated their laws, Gareth, their guidelines. They call them guidelines, but let's face it, they're laws, because, you know, if you don't obey these guidelines, you're not just being guided down a line, you're being financially penalised if you don't listen. Yeah. And for all I know, the WHO don't like us tanning our nutsacks till they're a brighter shade of pale.
I'm surprised that's not something you and Bear Grylls did together.
Well, we did, actually, but it was an inadvertent side effect rather than the intention of our trip up to the Hebrides.
Right. That wasn't the name of the show.
Well, Russell Brand and Bear Grylls tan their nut bags together.
No.
Bear Grylls told me some pretty exceptional... He said Bear Grylls sent me a photograph of my own father, like a secret agent. Like, you know when, like, sort of... say if you're watching a Tom Cruise film and, like, you're talking to the baddie and he's maybe played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, God rest his eternal soul. And, like, he'll send you, like, you'll be in, listen, I got you, you son of a bitch. And then, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman will send a picture of, like, your kids going to school or your wife at a supermarket. Yeah. That's what Philip Seymour Hoffman, terrorist, would do in
sure,
a film.
Of course he would. Well, classic move.
Classic. That's classic Hoffman. this is... Bear Grylls sent me a picture of my own dad on the front of a magazine from the 1980s.
Was it? Is he trying to intimidate you?
He did intimidate me, and I was already intimidated from glaring up his kilt while I was running wild. Mm. It was nothing wilder. We're talking to Paul Saladino about carnivore diets. Would you consider the carnivore diet? Am I crazy being a vegan? Let me know. Is it the vegan way or is it the carnivore way? Because tell you what, things are changing fast. Like, which story do you want to hear fast? I'm going to consult our locals community on this. Do you want to hear about Cornel West, who is, you know, as liberal and left as they come, slamming AI? AOC and Bernie Sanders. Do you want to start there? Or do you want to start with rats in New York City that are the size of a slipper, the size of a man's fist, the size of a dog's elbow, the size of the length of a pig's tail? What's it going to be, rats or Cornell? Tell us. We're doing Maui a little bit later. Rats. People want rats.
Right.
Okay, let's have a look at these rats in New York City. It's really weirdly reported on story. We'll do Cornell West slamming Bernie Sanders after. You'll love this because what it shows is that independent political figures are coming together like RFK and Cornell West and even the great avatar of the anti-establishment, Donald Trump, in alliance, at least in alliance in terms of the discourse, in terms of the critiques they're offering of the establishment. You're going to love this, but first, there's a rat in this city. What am I going to do? Let's have a look.
The first anti-rat day of action was held in Harlem.
We've had rats the size of Crocs just running up and down the street like a Croc shoe, an average size 8.
Like that, because it's a rat that's the size of a croc, not a crocodile, but a croc shoe. Mm. She then offers some further guidance. It's a size 8. Mm. That's an average size 8.
Yeah.
So that's that big, is it?
Yeah, that's about right.
About that big?
That's kind of what I would imagine.
What I expect for a rat.
A rat, yeah. Also, the bit where she said running up and down the street.
Where it goes up it, then down it.
Well, that's another thing that I would expect from a rat.
They're just up to their
usual. They're not doing something, it's not like flying or something. They're not doing something really odd.
Right.
It's that standard rat behaviour.
They're not wearing little straw boaters right. And singing barbershop quartet songs. I'd like to draw your attention to that elegant rivulet of sweat running down that lady's mid-chest.
Mm. Like they're not becoming chefs.
Well, they are in the film Ratatouille,
sure.
Which I believe is an accurate portrayal of Parisian rat life. Let's see what else these rats are up to.
Running up and down the street.
Rats need food, water, and shelter to survive.
For the rats, are we against the rats? Is this a rat telephone? just for $1, you can buy a rat a little chef hat and an apron so it can make it as a chef in Gastron or whatever it is in that restaurant in France. She sounds like she's on the wrong side. Like, so one team hates the rats. Mm. They think they're too big like a shoe. Other team love the rats.
Mm. Why don't they just try and work together?
Okay, you guys so different
come
after
on.
All.
Today, we're going to cut off their food source and reduce their habitat. Take away the places they can live.
There you go. So rats in New York City, normal size, normal measures are being undertaken. If you don't want to live in a rat-infested city, don't give rats all of their delicious rat requirements, really.
Yeah, there's going to have to be a lot of work done on things like sanitation, but also the whole restaurant system, and the food system, big food, corporations. I mean, there's a lot of work,
I would
suggest.
You're going to have to start again from the beginning, because you know where there's a real infestation? Washington, cronyism, capitalism, corruption. Everywhere you look, but a friend of the show, Cornell West, is getting stuck into the real problem by moving beyond partisan politics and into exactly the type of independent politics that we're advocating for. Independent media, independent politics, new voices in politics making new pledges. That's precisely why Cornell West is interesting on a podcast, The Breakfast Club. He had this to say about Bernie and AOC. Let's check him.
At the core of the Democratic Party is a rot, and that rottenness is corporate greed. So when I hear AOC, I say, okay, she's part of that progressive small slice of the Democratic Party, but she's given in to the perceptions of the corporate wing of that party. And the corporate wing says over and over again, all we have is two parties.
Mm.
It's freaking frack.
Mm-hmm.
It's Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Stay free with Russell Brand. See it first on Rumble. Should I put my ball bag out of the window? Should I stretch it long? Should I suck my own ball like a lozenge? Would it cure the common cold? Could it fight off COVID-19, PPD? Anyway, someone here says, Chief 411, never, ever give Russell a hypothetical. Because what I started to do, someone goes, who is this guy, Robert De Niro? That's Dawny Girl's idea. No, he's good. He's really good. He's had, like, you know,
he's
Tate
brilliant.
On there and Vivek Ramaswamy.
Yeah.
He's really good on economics. But I disagree with him with some stuff he said about single mums. We're allowed to disagree.
That's good.
Yeah, that's
healthy
good,
debate. That's
free
great.
Speech,
that's what
debate.
We're doing here. That's what we're doing
that's
here.
That's what I'm here for. And anyway, then when he started giving me help for hypothetical situations, I started to really make them weirder.
Yeah, of course you did.
In my hypothetical situation, I made a tit milk dairy and talked about incest and stuff like that.
Mm.
But it's all right. It's all good fun.
Good. He'll like it in a way.
Some pals living life to the full, I say. Well, then this say, Hunter Biden. Ian Drummer goes, his name is Hunter Biden, but maybe Russell should be called the Biden Hunter. Yeah, well, hunt him down.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Well, but I would hunt down Joe Biden more. It wouldn't be difficult, you'd have thought, because he can't move that quickly.
No.
Like, even when he was doing that speech a bit earlier, it's like he had to summon up every bit of it. Like, it's like, we're going to get $700. It's like he's pulling the words up from his sphincter.
Yeah.
And they've got a long way to go, yes. You know, because his sphincter, it might have been externalized, yes. Now, like right. A duck egg.
Got it.
Like a boy penguin's looking after the duck egg together.
Okay.
Hey, listen, guys. Do you want to know the truth? Should we be slinging our ball bags onto an aluminium foil tray, baking them in the hot, hot sun? And what about you ladies out there? You've got to cook up them labia till they're golden brown, textured like sun. What are we going to do to be free? Paul Saladino, him be on the show now. How's it going, Doctor?
It's good to see you, Russell. Thanks for having me on.
I'm so happy that you're here. You were recommended to me by our mutual friend, Bear Grylls. He just simply texted me, you got to have Paul Saladino on the show. And for that reason alone, and now but I love you more than ever because you're a hero-jawed, white-toothed wonder man. And I want to talk to you about carnivore diets, and I want to talk to you about gorgeous brown ball bags. What if your ball bags are already brown, Paul? How do you even know the bloody difference? And what's the point of all this ball bag bakery and carnivorism?
Did you know that your testicle sac, the scrotum, contains it's some of the highest concentration of melanin in your body? So you can get a tan on your body, but your balls can get even more tan than the rest of your body. So like the melanin in your ball sac is more than everywhere else.
Paul, is that why the ball bag is generally speaking, and I'm talking in the Caucasian skin tones here, because let me think about that. I'm talking universally. The ball bag is browner than the rest of the skin tone. Is that right?
Yeah, because it has melanin. And the idea here is just that real sunlight, I mean, you experience this with Bear when you guys are out sunning your ball sacks in the wilderness. Real sunlight is valuable for humans. Real ultraviolet light does a lot of things in the human body that vitamin D capsules can't do. We know that vitamin D is valuable for humans. We saw this during the COVID pandemic when the majority of people admitted to the hospitals were vitamin D deficient. I mean, how many thousands, tens of thousands of lives could be saved with attention to simple supplementation with vitamin D? But even sunlight is better than vitamin D supplementation. And you can get it wherever you want, on your skin, on your chest, or you can get it on your coffee-soaked balls now. That's the antidote to coffee on your balls.
Marinate them in caffeine and bake them in the sun. Paul, I'm so glad. I'm actually going to need you as an expert witness because during the pandemic, at the height of it, I did march into the emergency room and I said, while you lots are coughing and spluttering on ventilators, these guys are the solution. And I'm not afraid to admit, I presented my ball bags to some of the senior consultants and medical officials there. They asked me to leave, and would you believe it? I'm facing prosecution and even trial. So the point of this is it brings about natural vitamin D. Your ball bags are the route to health. Now, you know, Paul, that I'm a very committed vegan. By God, I live and I die for sweet lady veganism. But you're saying that the carnivore diet might have some method to its madness. And what about veganism? Is it some sort of fad? Should we put aside our compassion for the cow and down a bit of their leg?
Not at all. I think that anyone who makes an intentional choice with regard to their diet, anyone who's not just walking as a zombie and eating whatever foods fall in front of them or they can pick up in an airport or at a fast food joint deserves to be appreciated. And though you and I make different intentional decisions with regard to our diets, the first step for people finding health, and I think being a good citizens in the community of the earth, is making intentional choices and understanding how we're choosing to eat. With regard to meat versus plants, I have found and I have concerns that when humans don't eat meat and organs, so we're talking about like muscle meat, steaks, hamburgers, or organs like heart and liver, which come with the whole package of the animal, there are a lot of nutrient deficiencies that can develop unless we're very, very intentional about supplementation. And this is where things get really interesting and you go really far down the rabbit hole. But I've just seen so many people improve their health when they include more meat in their diet, and organs especially, like liver. And I think that for the last 2 to 3, maybe 5 decades, we've been told that meat is bad for us. But when I look at the science, I think meat is good for humans nutritionally. You and I can talk about the ethics and how we navigate that in the world if you want. But I think nutritionally, meat is so valuable for kids, for adults, for elderly. There's so many things to argue for including these animal foods in our diet from a nutritional standpoint.
From a nutritional standpoint, yeah, thank you, Paul, for that distinction. Is it primarily because of protein or particular types of protein? Because I'll say this, I'm actually looking to put on functional muscle mass as a result of a forthcoming contest against RFK. I've got to do a pull-up competition. I'm willing to ingest almost anything. Are you saying it's impossible to get strong enough to win a pull-up competition without a little bit of meat in your diet? And what is it in particular that where are the benefits derived from, mate?
There's the protein in animal foods is more bioavailable than the protein in plant foods. But there are examples of people who eat a vegan diet who have lots of muscles. And some of those people are probably supplementing with some steroids or some exogenous hormones. But I know people in the vegan community that I've had respectful conversations with who are probably just taking a lot of protein powder. But if you just want to eat foods that you could get from the earth, that you could hunt and gather, and not a synthetic hemp protein or a synthetic pea protein made in the lab, you're going to be able to gain muscle and all of the other benefits that come with the meat. We can talk about the other nutrients much more easily by including animal foods in your diet than you would by eating things like peas and lentils and things like this. So if you think about this, this gets a little technical, but there's this one amino acid, leucine, in meat that's associated with muscle growth. And you can get enough leucine to trigger optimal muscle growth in 8 ounces of meat, like a burger patty, maybe even 6 ounces of meat. But to get that amount of leucine, to get Russell Brand jacked to beat RFK in this pull-up contest, you're going to have to eat pounds of rice and lentils. I mean, pounds a day. That's going to cause problems for your septic system in your house. And maybe nobody will want to be around you because of the flatulence. So God. I'm just telling you, like, it's a better, and then we can talk about the other things too. That's just the protein, but there are many other nutrients that are valuable in animal foods and meat that you can't get in plant foods at all.
True Nature's Child says, I've got no gallbladder, so I have to watch the fat or it gets runny. And I feel like I do take a lot of protein powders. I drink a nice protein shake. It's delicious most days. But you're saying that it's not just protein we need to add. Like, in your ideal world, Dr. Paul Saladino, you've got salad in your name, but not in your game. The ball bag is out the window, baking in the sun. You're noshing down on elk meat. Is that what it's going to take? Tell us a little bit about your diet, oh wise and handsome man.
Yeah, elk meat and elk liver and grass-fed cattle. We can talk about regenerative agriculture, but beyond the protein, when people think about meat and steaks, they just think about protein. But Russell, it's so interesting when you go down the rabbit hole and you think about the other nutrients that are in meat that are difficult to find in plant foods or impossible to find in plant foods. There's been a lot of research recently about this compound called taurine. And of course, the name is there, it's bull. And taurine has been found in worm models, in mouse models, and in primate models to extend longevity in those models. So we haven't done controlled experiments in humans, but taurine looks to be beneficial for humans in other sorts of experiments in terms of cognitive benefits and as an antioxidant. And the only place you get taurine, so clearly shows benefit across multiple species in longevity and overall quality of life, the only place you get this is animal meat. And I don't know many vegans that are supplementing with taurine. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. What about creatine? What about carnitine? What about carnosine? What about anserine? What about vitamin K2? What about riboflavin? It's just that we've evolved eating meat. And there are so many of these key nutrients that allow us to thrive as humans that are predominantly or exclusively found in meat and organs that don't occur in hemp protein or pea protein or Brussels sprouts.
What about Tina Turner? What about Flavor Flav? You can't just hit me with a list of magical strings of nutrients and expect me to sit there and take it like a baking ball bag. Dr. Paul Saladino, what are the ethnographic and anthropological undergirdings of this? Because as surely as we are hunters, we are gatherers. And I suppose really the only reason I'm not eating animals is not for nutritional reasons in my case. I've seen Game Changers. I've seen them documentaries. For me, it's just, I think, animals, they're all right. I don't want, like, as Morrissey once said, I don't think something's life should end just so I can have a snack. That's the only reason. And I agree with you as well, by the way. I don't think everything should get so politicized that you can't let people be different from you. That's crazy. It sort of don't make no difference. My wife ain't vegan. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just you know, it's not a political thing for me. It's just a personal choice. Like I believe all spiritual choices should fundamentally be personal. And if people are inspired by your sacrifices or endeavours, although I don't know how they would be when they hear how I live my life, coffee sloshing about in my groin while I displace my neighbour's shrubbery, then that's that. But like, do you think that human beings, is there not a way, mate, that it could be healthier to live on plants? And or would that involve that the degree of supplementation you've described? And if it does, what of it? Why not supplement yourself up to the hilt?
So I don't believe there's any evidence in the medical literature that meat is bad for humans. I mean, you sort of asked, is it healthier to be on plants? And I would say, no, it's not. It's healthier to include meat in your diet, especially for children, but even for adults. And then for elderly who become frail, who need the muscle mass to avoid sarcopenia, which is when we get kind of skinny fat, lose our peripheral muscle mass and get kind of like fat on the inside. Like, you know, so we know that what kills elderly people, what causes us to die, is frailty. And the way that you avoid frailty is by having enough quality food in your diet, especially micronutrient-rich meat and organs. And then for children's development, for proper development of the brain and all of the organs and all of these tendons and muscles as kids are developing and growing so they're strong and resilient, the animal foods provide so many unique nutrients that are so hard to get elsewhere. You asked about the anthropology, and I think this is an incredibly important point. So I went to Tanzania last year and got to hang out with this tribe of hunter-gatherers called the Hadza. They're some of the last hunter-gatherers left on the planet. There's only a few thousand true hunter-gatherers left on the planet. And I'll tell you what, we hunted and then we ate the animal. We ate the organs first. We ate the animal from nose to tail. I shared the brain of this animal with the hunter that killed the animal the next day. I ate the brain with him. I'm sure they ate the testicles, but I didn't get a chance to see them because they were so prized. And then we ate honey. They found a beehive and they ate the honey. We found some berries. These hunter-gatherers, they don't care about vegetables at all. They don't want to eat vegetables. They just want to eat meat. They want to eat fruit. They want to eat honey. And they want to eat this baobab fruit. And occasionally they'll eat a tuber, but that's the last thing they care about. If you look at hunter-gatherers, I think that from what we can tell with our ethnographic and anthropologic time machines, humans, we don't give a shit about vegetables if we can get other stuff that tastes better.
Good title. Paul, when you was living with them indigenous people, how did you get on? Was the vibe good? Did they include you? Did you get on their nerves? Did you start cozying up to them too tight in the living quarters? Was it a bit like Dances with Wolves? Also, like, was there a good ceremonial atmosphere? People living a lifestyle where they were connected to meaning and purpose because survival acquired a kind of mythic quality because it took so much endeavour and focus after a day's hunting. Did it feel beautiful to sit around a campfire? Was there a sense of community, connection? Were there other aspects beyond diet, your diet-obsessed lunatic, that were inspiring?
Yeah, it was really cool to be with them. I mean, I think of them as like the best time machine we've got. It's not a perfect DeLorean. This isn't perfectly Back to the Future, but it's about 50,000 years ago, I imagine, that you go back in time when you see these people. Now, they're influenced by the Western world, for sure, but it was really moving to sit around the fire with them. They were very welcoming. They were happy, Russell. They were fundamentally happy and peaceful people. They welcomed us. I think they were more welcoming because we wanted to go on hunts. We said, let's take us on the longest hike, and very few people go visit them. And even fewer of the people that go visit them will go on an 8 or 9 hour hike / run / hunt with them. So we got to see as much as we possibly could embedded with them. And it was just fundamental happiness was what they were sharing with us. Just, they didn't have cell phones. They don't use money. They were just happy having what they had. They had community and they celebrated the food when they could get it and they shared it. And especially when we had very successful hunts, there was music and dancing and they were happy to share that with us. So not a perfect time machine, but it was pretty idyllic. It was really pretty remarkable, the experience with them.
Also, the DeLorean was not a very good time machine. As I recall, there were problems with the flux capacitor and it broke down in that barn and Marty McFly had to stay there. And we all know what he did when he met his mum, Paul. And I'm sure you're not endorsing that, Paul, because that's called incest. And that, no, it don't matter how much elk meat you consume. If you're eating it from your mother's lap, that is a problem in the sweet name of Jesus. Mate, what did they hunt and what did they hunt with?
They make all of their own hunting implements. So they have bows and arrows they make from wood. Their arrows are made from wood. They have a neighboring tribe called the Datoga that will make them steel or metal arrowheads. And they will sometimes take a local plant called an elephant foot plant and put poison on the tip of an arrow. And so they hunt with bows made from wood, sinew, and then arrows they've made by themselves. And they are predominantly hunting local animals around Lake Eyasi in Tanzania. And their hunting grounds have been constricted because of encroachment from other pastoralist tribes. So they don't have as much access to game as they once did. But their prized thing is an eland, which is a large sort of impala type ruminant animal. When I was with them, we hunted baboons. And along the way, they would hunt small monkeys and birds.
Did you have a go in the bow and arrow? And wouldn't you feel a bit guilty shooting a baboon down because it's so sort of the simians beings are so human? Like, I imagine them tumbling out of a tree, sort of going, ah, and almost maybe going, bloody hell, I've got a date tonight. Don't you feel a bit, at least if you shoot an ungulate, it's got that slit up its hoof, I think. Oh, well, you're asking for it. But a monkey that looks like it, I put aside the one that betrayed Indiana Jones in the marketplace. Fuck that little guy. But normally, monkeys are our friends. Didn't you feel a bit bad about it? And did you have a go?
It's so when we were actually at the key part of the hunt for the baboons, this tribe of Hadza, this maybe 8 or 9 Hadza males hunters, they just scattered everywhere. They were running and I was just sort of watching and like trying not to get in their way, but they were hurting the monkeys in certain ways. They had dogs. And so they were the ones that were actually trying to get the monkeys out of the tree, or the baboons, excuse me. So I wasn't directly involved in the baboon hunt. I was like right there with them, but it was so frenetic. And I'm a Westerner, right? I've never hunted a baboon in my life. I've never been in their tribe. I have no business doing this with them. The fact that it's like a human and has a thumb and opposable fingers, it is kind of stirring and disturbing, but you also realize that this is life for them. And this kind of goes back to your point earlier, and I'll add this as humbly and as respectfully as possible. When I think about food choices that we make as humans, I'm reminded of a book that I read when I was younger. It's called The Tracker by Tom Brown. And he tells a story in the book of being apprenticed to this Apache Indian elder who was teaching him sort of these Native American ways. And he tells a story of killing his first animal when he was 9 or 10 years old. And it's a lame deer that he's killed by himself with a knife. He brings it back to camp and he's weeping. And this Apache and Native American says, "Why are you crying?" And he says, "Because I killed this animal." And I'm paraphrasing from the book, but this has stuck with me. So the response from this elder was, in order for something to live, something else must die. This is the way of life. When you understand that the life in a blade of grass is the same and it's all kind of this life force, you'll understand this. And the goal is to be respectful of the things that you're using to fuel your life. So even when people want to eat plants and they believe that the plants are resulting in less death, I think that it's interesting and important to really look into that and understand all of the ecosystems that are disrupted by the plants that we eat, all of the bykills, all the moles, the voles, the beavers, the snakes, the rabbits. There are literally tens of thousands of lives that are disrupted, that are displaced, that are killed when we're plowing a field to grow plants. And so I think that if we want to live on this earth as humans, and I feel like you especially illustrate this, we have the ability to do a lot of good in the world as humans. We have to accept that in order for something to live, something else must die. And when I think about the choices we make in terms of food quality, I believe, and this is just my belief, that by eating meat and organs, we're giving our bodies such unique nutrients that allows us to do the best work in the world, allows us our brains to function well, allows us to be strong and protect our families. And so I believe that we have this purpose on earth to do good in the world, and that none of us should be, I think, ignorant to the way that we affect the world. We're all responsible for ending life. And it's just how we choose to use that gift that we're given as we get the chance to live and do things in the world.
Those are excellent points, Paul. And it's to a degree exposes that sometimes we adopt the pose of morality when what we are in fact discussing is sentimentality rather than true morality. That the consequences of the food systems and how they're economically undergirded is not free from a negative impact, exactly as you've described. And this ideology of non-separateness acknowledging a continuum of life beyond materialistic, individualistic, solipsistic obsession with the role of humans and our sort of supremist kind of position in hierarchies, even beyond the food chain and in sort of ultra civilized social systems. It protects us. It protects us in sort of a kingdom of folly from the consequences of our actions. And yeah, you present some really interesting arguments. But what I also got from listening to that hunt is when it came to the crunch of shooting a baboon, you floundered and you scampered and you got in the way. You dropped the bow and arrow, you squealed, you tripped up, you probably distracted them from an important and nourishing meal. But it's time now to put your testicles back in your pants. The sun has got its hat on and your balls should have their pants on, because this is an important moment in our show and it's as indigenously wonderful as any native ceremony you might have experienced.
Oh, well, that was a shock.
That's when Gareth asked the question that happens, Paul, and here it comes, look.
Paul, that was really interesting. I mean, you've raised some amazing points, and I've recently started eating meat again myself due to a lot of the things...
When were you going to tell us?
Well, I was hiding it from you.
You bastard! What have you been having?
For these very reasons.
No, you've just heard that! What's next? You've been out kicking a baboon? I went down London Zoo yesterday and kicked a baboon up the bollocks. It's the only way that I could ensure myself a full head of hair. This is outrageous.
I've started to reintroduce some meat into my diet for the reasons that you... But what
you
I mean,
didn't know them reasons.
Well, who do you think I work with all day long? Young Putin.
What's young Putin be saying?
He's obsessed with this information.
If you're not necking a raccoon kidney.
He loves Paul. He thinks Paul's a god to him.
Is he?
Yeah.
Young Putin's in there, Paul. He loves you. He looks like Putin, the Russian leader, when he was a young man. Like he's a dead ringer for him. He's well into your gear.
Yep.
He loves it. He's sat there now sucking on a baboon's butt simply to impress you. That's before he knew it was nutritious. Go on then, ask your question.
So I wondered what, in terms of, you mentioned grass-fed meat is, you know, the kind of the best that you can get and it's important. When it comes to people, because obviously that comes with a certain expense to it, you know, grass-fed meat, the high-quality meat that you ideally want to buy, what if you can't afford that? What about people who want to, you know, get the same kind of quality meat, but they have to like go to the shops to buy it. Like,
Paul? What you gonna do about that now, Paul Saladino? What they gotta do? Stick their bum out the window and see if they can get some vitamin D up the rectum. You think you've got an answer for everything, don't you, Saladino? Well, he's got you, hasn't he? The lad from Hull, he's flummoxed you. It's privileged elitism. We can't all go off and live with a tribe, annoying them by ballsing up an important hunt. Can we? Some of us are down Lidl, down the middle aisles, eating brains faggots.
So this is a really interesting point. So let's just make sure people understand what grass-fed meat means. So I want to be clear that I stand with you guys shoulder to shoulder and not being a fan of industrialized agriculture for animals, whether it's chickens or pigs or cows. I think clustered animal feeding is not the way that we create healthy ecosystems for those animals, not the way that we create the healthiest animals. And it certainly isn't good for those animals' welfare and life in their lifespan. But when you've seen a grass-fed and grass-finished cow, that's a cow that's basically on a pasture its whole life. And I've been to a lot of farms. I've been fortunate to be a lot with a lot of really cool farmers that I've learned a lot from, because I grew up in the suburbs of Northern Virginia. You know, I'm not a farmer. I'm not a Hodza hunter, as Russell has clearly outed me for. But when you're with these farmers on these farms and you see these cows, they're eating grass. They're healthy cows. They eat grass for their whole life, which is what they're meant to eat evolutionarily. Like all other species on the planet, I think that cows have a species appropriate diet. And I think humans in some ways have a species appropriate diet. So I think that it's clear that grass feeding, grass finishing of cattle is good in so many ways. Good for the cattle, good for their sort of their being while they're alive. They have this happy, healthy life. And all animals die eventually, right? If they're in the wild, they're killed by a predator. These cows are just safe and they get to eat grass and they're healthy their whole lives. It creates healthier meat free from pesticides and other things that come with grain feeding at the end of a cow's lifespan when it's in a clustered animal feeding operation. And from an environmental perspective, if you look at the the carbon emissions, if you want to get that granular, we know that this way of raising animals, especially regenerative raising, where they do rotational grazing of these animals, is actually carbon negative or carbon neutral. So there's so many reasons to eat grass-fed meat. It's nutritionally better. It's free from pesticides and mold toxins that come with the grains. And from an environmental perspective, if that's something you get wrapped around the axle about, if you're worried about carbon emissions and these kind of things, it's clearly beneficial. Now, for some people, the grass-fed meat is more difficult financially. I'd say it's probably 20 to 40, maybe 50% more expensive. I want people to not let perfect get in the way of benefits. And so if someone can't afford grass-fed meat, get the meat that you can afford. Because I do think that even though we know that a grain-fed animal is not ideal from a lifespan perspective, from a life cycle perspective, it's still going to have lots of good nutrients. It's still going to have the taurine and the Flavor Flav and the Tina Turner that we talked about earlier, Russell. And you know, it's going to have these unique nutrients that are hard to get other places. And then I think that people can start to make these calculations in their mind. For me personally, I can't think of anything that's a better investment than quality of food for you and for your family. But I'm going to let everyone else listening to this make their own decisions in terms of how they use their finances. Maybe they want to spend it on
going to get a bow and arrow. You're not going to get a bow and arrow and go around their house and spangle it off in the wrong direction, telling them that it's Paul Saladino's way or it's the highway. Oh, we're allowed to make our own choices. You're not going to march us into McDonald's and make us sup down a pint of cow fat with a straw.
No, no. You know what's interesting about McDonald's, though, and a lot of these fast food places, is that even at McDonald's, and I've done some content about McDonald's and how bad their french fries are, how many ingredients and how bad their food is. But you can go to McDonald's in terms of like getting food availability. Their quarter pounder is 100% beef. They don't have any additives in their quarter pounder and they don't use seed oils to cook it. So it was interesting, you know, when we were in Austin, I wanted to talk to some of the homeless people and ask them like, how much money do you get asking people per day? You know, you can get a 4 quarter pounders at McDonald's for $6 to $7. And that's for someone who has no stove and no way to cook. You can get 100% beef. Now, is that the ideal way to get beef? No. Is that the ideal beef? No. But the accessibility is there. And even in like the fast food joint that is the epitome of probably many causes of our health problems today, there is an ability to make a less bad, potentially even reasonable health choice in terms of high quality meat.
Dr. Paul Saladino, Thomas Beard in our locals chat says, have you ever tried any plant-based food or do you think it's beneath you, you heartless monster? No, I added the last bit. He just said, have you tried any plant-based food?
You know, I was a vegan once, Russell. I was a raw vegan for 7 months, probably about 14 or 15 years ago. And I would go to my local grocery store and buy 2 heads of kale per day. So I'd walk out with 6 heads of kale. And this cute girl at the grocery store says, what is that for? And I said, well, it's for my smoothies. And I made these huge green smoothies. So I've been down the vegan path myself. Like I said, I respect people's autonomy and their ability to make these choices. I just believe as a physician and from a scientific perspective that there are better choices for human health that can be made ethically and morally as well. So I've been there. I haven't tried any of the vegan burgers. Every time we do content on any of this stuff, my whole team is trying to like, just eat some Beyond Burger. And I just won't do it.
Why, Paul?
Because I know what's in the ingredients, Russell. And I worry a lot of these plant-based foods contain seed oils, which are something that I have a major problem with. I don't think it's healthy for humans. Things like corn, canola, sunflower, safflower, soybean oils. I'm not convinced that I want to get leg hemoglobin. So like fake hemoglobin in my diet. A lot of the plant-based burgers contain cellulose, which can be problematic for human gut. So I look at this food and I think it's not healthy for humans. And if someone is really feeling a pull from the deeper regions of their brain to eat meat, that's probably an evolutionary signal that you need those nutrients.
I have a study here from Johns Hopkins University, and it says that when Paul Saladino says the vegan pathway, he's referring to his own anus. Is that true, Paul?
Of course it's true. It's Johns Hopkins. How could I debate that?
Can't debate Johns Hopkins. Paul, thank you so much. What an amazing conversation. What a fantastic perspective. So much to think about. Let's stay in touch. I think we've already got each other's emails and that, and we'll communicate more. Or I'll get it off bear or something.
I so appreciate what you're doing. Thank you so much for having me on. I hope it's valuable for you guys.
Oh, you're just lovely to talk to. You're a delight. Thank you so much. You can find out more about Paul at heartandsoil.co. .co or dragonist.com and download the Paul Saladino podcast, which I reckon is brilliant because he's
so lovely.
Lovely, isn't he?
So knowledgeable. He's nearly killed a baboon.
He's nearly killed a baboon. He was trying to march the homeless into McDonald's. He's telling us there's nothing better we can do with our lives than go in there and start eating
quarter pounders.
Well, he's out of control.
It's quarter
geezer.
Pounders. He's very specific about that.
Quarter pounders says his beef paste. And he's sort of got a very open, kind face.
Oh, he's so nice.
I really liked him.
The murderer.
He's a monkey murderer. He'll murder a monkey as soon as look at it, wouldn't he? He'll shoot it out of trees.
Any monkey he sees. Oh, look at that cute
Bring
little capuchin.
Sir, this is Whipsnade, Safari Park. Do you know that you've got to eat giraffe tongues? They may look like velvety and prickly, but they're actually delicious. You can't actually survive unless you snatch a giraffe's tongue, wrap it around your fist, and yank it out of the giraffe's head. It's the only thing you can do for your children. Otherwise, it's irresponsible. I liked Paul Saladino a lot.
Very
that
nice.
Was a good guess,
very
man. Nice. It's funny, isn't it? Because sometimes you like... Well, I'm not going to say that.
No, save it for...
right, so, hey, listen, we've got some fantastic people coming up this week. We've got Dr. Peter Attia talking about longevity, testosterone, and as fucking usual on this show, nuts and testicles and bollocks. I mean,
wow.
It's all that we're talking about. What's going on? Click the red button to join our locals community. First of all, you get access to interviews ahead of everybody else, and you can join us and ask questions if you can get a word in edgeways around Gareth here. We do regular meditations that are bespoke and guided. What's the matter? What's the matter, mate? Someone in the chat says you look like Liam Hemsworth.
Well, that's a lovely thing to say.
So what's the problem? You look like Liam Hemsworth. You've got to take the rough with the smooth, don't you?
You're right.
Take the rough with the smooth. You look like Liam Hemsworth. Well, leave Gal alone, says Jim Earth C137. Paleolithic, bloody happy medium. What a load of rubbish. All right, anyway, listen, you might be wondering. kerosene, testosterone, taurine. Rubbish. It's all made up. Join us again tomorrow. Not for more of the same, we'd never insult you with that, but for more of the different. Until next time, stay free. Switch off, switch off, switch off, switch off, switch off, switch off.